Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally, 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And the editorial review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Can They Do That? Right after this. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. John Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press, and Swinton totally outraged all of his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world history in America as an independent press. Now, you know it, and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly, he said, for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings. We dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Well, now these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and this New World Order. They are the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers, the Bushes, the Bundys, the Carnegies, and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend it's time for us to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and to stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free 4-hour compact disc package. That's the place to start. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, can they do that? I get asked that quite often. Someone will call the law school and tell me a little story about somebody in some office. It's the telephone company, the power company. It's the driver's license bureau. It's the licensing bureau of this or that or something else. It's the power company that are making demands upon people, and sometimes those demands are somewhat intrusive. Can they make me get a Social Security number? Is it the law? Can they make me give them this information? A lot of times people are a little reluctant to give out information that they think is personal and private. Well, listen, anybody can ask you for anything. Think about that for a minute. You know, I can ask you for your marriage license. Now the question is, are you going to give it to me? Can they do that? Yes. Yeah, they can do that. But that's not the real question. The real question is, do I have to comply with that request? Now, in ancient societies, people used to pass down their traditions, their oral traditions, of their day-to-day contact in the society with other members of the society. And those were called stories. I call it story time. And oftentimes, when I'm teaching a class or a school, I will tell my students a story. No, a real live story. This is what happened to me one time when something like that came up. And here's the way I handled that. Here's the way I dealt with that. Today in modern society, we want to have a book that we can turn to, a policy guide. That's the way the Army works. You know, if you want to know, can they do that? Well, the sergeant looks it up in the Army's regulations or the Army's policies. They don't tell stories. They don't tell real life, here's what happened to me when that subject matter came up. That's why I kind of like these ancient societies and their stories that they would hand down from generation to generation, like the American Indians. You know, here in North America, they would hand down their oral traditions. You know, here's the way we deal with other tribes. Here's the way we deal with those kinds of problems here in our tribe, in our society. So let me tell you a few stories here. And let's see if we can't help you make that determination. Can they do that? Now, the first thing I do is I apply what I call the Denny's restaurant waitress test to the question. The Denny's restaurant waitress test. Let's suppose we went into Denny's restaurant and we sit down, you and I, we're going to have lunch, and the waitress comes over and she has a clipboard. And she hands each of us a clipboard, and on the clipboard is a piece of paper with a lot of questions on it. And the first question is, what is your name? What is your social security number? What is your address? Where do you work? How much money do you make? And why are you here for lunch today? Let's just start off with those questions. Because when you go to a doctor's office, that's the first thing that happens. Somebody hands you a clipboard with a piece of paper on it, and they ask a lot of invasive questions. And I mean invasive questions like, do you have hemorrhoids? Have you ever been treated for mental illness? Have you ever been denied insurance or health care coverage? Now, these questions are pretty common. You go to a dentist's office, and he asks the question, are you allergic to penicillin? Now, if I went into a Denny's restaurant and I sat down for lunch and the girl came over and she handed me a questionnaire and it asked me for things like, what's your social security number? That's not to say that you don't have a social security number or that from time to time you might want to tell somebody what your social security number is. I could understand the logic behind, I turned 65 and now I want to collect my social security benefits that I've been paying for many, many years. I go into the social security office and the lady asks me, what's your social security number? And I say, I ain't telling you. Now, what do you think your chances of collecting your Social Security checks are going to be? So, you know, there are some people out there that probably need to know what your Social Security number is if we want to attain a goal. But when I walk into a doctor's office and the guy asks me for my Social Security number, or a policeman, you know, says, what's your Social Security number? Or I apply for an insurance policy and they ask me, what's your Social Security number? I have to ask myself, well, now, what does my Social Security number have to do with the business at hand? You walk into the power company and you want to buy power. You want to buy electricity is what you're really there for. And the guy says, what's your social security number? What if you walked into the power company and the guy said, do you have hemorrhoids? Are you allergic to penicillin? Well, maybe I do have hemorrhoids, and maybe I am allergic to penicillin, but what in the hell has that got to do with me buying power or buying lunch at Denny's? And so oftentimes people will call the law school and say, well, can they do that? Well, of course they can do that. They do it, don't they? Isn't that why you're calling and asking the question, can they do that? Well, of course they can. And they did. Did you answer? And in every case, yes. Yeah, I had to give them my social security number or they wouldn't serve lunch at Denny's. Could you get up and walk out? Could you tell the Denny's people to go to hell in a handbasket? Well, you could have, but you were hungry. And it was easier to comply, wasn't it? Now, fortunately, the last time I was in Denny's, the waitress didn't hand me a questionnaire, and she didn't ask me what my social security number was. I went in, I sat down, made my order, got up, paid my bill, walked out, and they did not know my name. They didn't know who I was. Well, I could have been a wild-eyed terrorist from Saudi Arabia, and they'd have never known. Now, why did they need to know? Now, the Army, the military services work on that principle, and they put a label on it. It's called the need to know. And when you work in a classified or a secure area and you want to know something, you know, somebody's going to ask you, what's your need to know? Why do you need to know how the landing gear works on an F-16 Tomcat? You know, why do you need to know how this aircraft carrier works? You see, they don't want to tell everybody in the world, you know, what they're doing, what they're up to, and how that works. And so there's a logical reason why privacy or security needs to be maintained. Well, that's the way life is. Has it ever occurred to us that maybe there's some areas of our lives that should be secure from the prying eyes of other people? Now, your social security number is pretty important because it's a national uniform identifying number. And when I have that number, I can go out and steal your identity, run up a lot of bills on your credit card, steal your identity, and cause you just no end of grief. So just passing out your name, address, social security number, credit card numbers, and PIN numbers, and so on. You know, your PIN number on your credit card is a security device to keep other people out of your money. And your social security number is an identifier, and it's an important number, and you ought to kind of keep it private. That's assuming that you should even have one to start with. That's another topic for another day, but, you know, most people have social security numbers and PIN numbers and credit cards and all these thingies over here, and there's people asking for them all the time. And then they'll turn around and say, well, how can they do that? Well, I mean, let's go back to oral tradition. You know, there was a time in America when people had real problems and they had real solutions, and they'd tell you a story. Like my Uncle Buster would tell me the story about how he did something or other. And my Aunt Bessie would tell me a story about, well, here's what happened when that happened to me. So let me pass a story on to you and tell you when that happened to me, here's how I did that. So let's talk about the Idaho Power Deposit Interest story. Here's the background to it. I wanted to open an office down on Chinon Boulevard, and if I would have been an ordinary Joe Sixpack, I'd have just gone into the power company, filled out all the forms, gave them the information, gave them all the credit history and one thing and another, and they would have turned the power on without a deposit. But I didn't want to give them any credit history. I didn't want to tell them any more than was absolutely necessary, so I walked in and I filled out the form with no credit information. And the guy says, well, you'll have to pay a $150 deposit if you don't give us this credit history, you know, your social security number, and where do you have power, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, that's fine. So I whipped out $150, put it on the counter, and here's the total amount of information they had. They had a name, Barrister's Inn. I think it might have said Barrister's Inn, School of Common Law. They had an address, 1255 Chinon Boulevard, and a zip code and so on, and that was about it. A $150 deposit. I don't remember what else I filled out, but there was a lot of questions on the form, and I filled out the form in a way like this. I put in there, not applicable, no, none, never, Fourth Amendment objection, First Amendment objection, Fifth Amendment objection, Fourth Amendment objection. You know, I put in, I answered every question on the form. There's a legal principle. You don't have to do this for commercial businesses, but when we're dealing with government agencies, it's called the good faith effort. And so you need to answer every question. So, but you know, if somebody asks you what's your social security number, you could put Fourth Amendment objection on there, you know. Now, there could be a need for a social security number, and I'm not saying that there wouldn't be, but you know, outside of the social security office, I can't think of any legitimate reason for giving anybody a social security number. Now, there could be. I wouldn't say that there isn't. You may have some kind of business transaction that requires that outside the Social Security office, but I don't know where that might be. I guess your employer needs to have it, doesn't it? And when you go to work someplace, your employer needs to know your Social Security number. There's two places. But, you know, if I went into a Denny's restaurant and the girl asked me what my Social Security number was, I wouldn't tell her. And when I go into the doctor's office and they ask me what's your Social Security number, I put down N-O-N-E, none. That's because I don't have one. Now, if you have one, N-O-N-E is a lie, isn't it? It's not true. You do have one. So the words Fourth Amendment objection would be correct. That's a true, accurate, and correct answer. None of your business would be another good answer. Not applicable would be another good answer. So I walked out of there, and now the law up in Idaho requires that the power company, at the end of 12 months, give you back your $150. See, if you make your payments every month on time, then you have established good credit. The power company is protected, because you've actually paid your power bill in advance. Now, at that time, the typical power bill would have been $50 a month, and so they're actually protected 3 months in advance. I mean, I'd have to burn the electric heaters 24/7 to burn up $150 in 30 days. And so they have plenty of cushion built in, and if you don't pay your bill at the end of 30 days, they've got the option of shutting your power off, don't they? All right, so that's the purpose for the deposit. It's to guarantee that you're going to pay, because you don't have any credit. You don't have any credit history, and so they want to be paid cash in advance. That's what that is. That's not COD. That's cash in advance when you put up a deposit. Now, most people don't want to put up a deposit. I do, because I like my privacy. Sometimes people will ask me, what are you trying to hide? And I tell them, it's my privacy. Well, what is it about your privacy that you're trying to hide? And then I tell them, well, if I told you what it is I'm trying to hide, it wouldn't be hidden. So I don't want to tell you what I'm hiding. Now, that's a wild new concept for most Anglo-Saxons living here in the Western world. If you're living in New Zealand or Australia, especially you Canadians don't have any concept of privacy. None. I never met one yet. You Canadians you're lovely people. I really like you. Canadians are really great guys. But I was going to move up to Canada one time back, you know, many years ago when I was a young man. And I went up there to Canada, and I found out you don't have a Fourth Amendment in your Constitution. No expectation of privacy. The Mounties just come into your house and look around. I thought, my God, is this really true? The Mounties just come into your house? Well, why shouldn't they? If you're not breaking the law, what have you got to hide? That's the way the Canadians see it. If you're not breaking the law, what do you got to hide? And I said, well, I've got my privacy to hide. Well, what is it about your privacy that you're hiding? Well, if I told you what it is I'm hiding, it wouldn't be hidden. I wouldn't have any privacy. So the presumption in Canada is that you're obviously guilty of something. We're coming in here to find out what it is. Oh, we didn't find anything here today. Well, we'll be back at some future date, unannounced, and knock on your door again. Sometimes they don't even knock. They just open the door and come in. So here's the power company, and they've got my $150. Now, the law requires that they give me back my $150 at 6% interest at the end of the year. So one day I'm in my office doing my thing. My secretary came in, and she handed me a letter from Idaho Power Company addressed to me. So I opened it up, and here was a check for $159. And then a little note in there that said, well, dear customer, we're pleased to have you, and you've established good credit with us, and you haven't missed a payment, and so here's your $150 with your $9 interest, 6%. Now, as a Hebrew, it's against the law for me to deal in interest. I don't collect it. I don't charge it. I don't participate in it. I know for Western people, well, for that matter, for anybody in the world, if you got a check and somebody paid you 6% interest, you know, why look a gift horse in the mouth? Now, the reason I look that gift horse in the mouth is because the creator of the universe, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has a unique rule, just kind of a little custom usage of practice. He says, don't practice usury. Frankly, I don't like that rule. I like to collect interest on my money. I think that's a hell of a neat idea. It's his idea that I shouldn't do that. I had a dad like that. I had a mother like that. I had these real neat ideas. And then mom and dad would come along and say, no, don't do that. And I was convinced that all my mother and father ever wanted to do was spoil kids' fun. That was the way I saw it. That's all mothers and fathers do in life is spoil kids' fun. That's what they're hired for. That's why they're parents. So I've got a parent, and we call him God. Most people do. And he said, I'm going to spoil your fun. So being a good little kid, I took the check, and then I put it back in another envelope, and I wrote a little note. And I said, thank you very much for the $150 back. I see the law here, and you owe me $150. And then I wrote a little note with it, and I said, now, I'm a Hebrew, and I don't collect interest. Because of my peculiar religious beliefs and practices, I don't deal in that. So would you please reissue this check for $150, and you keep your $9 interest? And I signed it and thanked them, and I sent it off. And some time went by, and one day I got a check in the mail. My secretary brought it in, and it was $159. In fact, it was the same check. And there was another letter. It came from the legal department of Idaho Power Company, and nice letter. The guy explained to me how the law requires that the power company pay 6% interest, and that the interest is $9, and that they have to pay it because it's the law, and so on. Now, that makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it? The Idaho Power Company, they're trying to obey the law of Idaho. And I'm one of their customers, and the Idaho Power people and George Gordon have a business deal. They're delivering electrical power, and I'm consuming it, and I owe them money for it, and I want to pay them. Furthermore, they want me to pay them. In fact, they tell me if I don't pay them, they won't deliver the electric service. They make me pay them cash in advance because I want to maintain my privacy under the Fourth Amendment. And because of that, I had to give them this deposit. But if I give them this deposit, they have to pay me $9 interest. Now, on the other hand, I've got this God over here, and he says, now, Gordon, I don't want you using that interest over there. I want you participating. I don't want you to do that. Now, it would be easy at this point in time, I guess, for me to say, well, God, you need to understand reality. It's the law, and so I'm going to take the $9 and buy a bottle of Jack Daniels and have a nice evening. So I took a look at this, and I said, you know, I wrote that guy a nice letter, and I explained to him why it was I didn't want the $9. And he just wrote me back a nice letter, and he said, you're going to take that $9 whether you like it or not. Can you follow that? And so the question comes up, well, can they do that? Well, of course they can do it. They just did, didn't they? They sent the letter back and said, here's your $150. We're not going to send you $150 and keep the $9 like you want us to. We're going to send you the $159. You're going to cash that check. You're going to take that $9 whether you like it or not. So what they're doing here is they're saying, well, you're not going to follow the law of God. You're going to follow the law of Idaho. Like it or lump it. That's the gauntlet that's being thrown down. But it's being thrown down very nicely. It was a nice letter. So I went out and got my car and I drove down to Idaho Power Company and I walked in the door and I said, I'd like to talk to somebody about this. And so, you know, when you get into these big corporations, you know, you go to talk to somebody and they look at you like you're work from work, you know, drinking water with your little finger. And pretty soon I got into a lawyer's office. They sent me over to the legal department. We're in the lawyer's office and I put the check on the counter and I talked to the guy, and so he did not know me from Adam. So he went and talked to another guy, and the guy that had written me the nice letter came in and took over. And so I told him what my problem was. I said, now listen, I'm a Hebrew, and I practice Hebrew law. And then we got into Jews, you know, well, then you must be a Jew, and are you a Christian, and blah, 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 you know. And we're sitting there talking about religion and churchy and church lady and one thing and another and so on. And then he told me that he was an Episcopalian and that he understood my dilemma, and he was real sorry and blah, blah, blah. And so pretty soon the conversation turned to, that's your check and it's $159 and that's what the law prescribes and that's what we're going to have to do and you're going to have to comply just like we do and blah, blah, blah. And so I said, son, let's wake up here and smell some coffee. I'm not going to cash this $159 check and you owe me $150. And the law says you're going to pay me that $150, and by God, I intend to collect it. And I said, you're going to pay me $150, and you're not going to pay me the $9, and you're not going to compel me to violate the law of God because of your law here in Idaho. That isn't going to happen. And what's ultimately going to happen here is that you and I are going to face each other across the table downtown in the 4th Judicial District. That's where we're going to start this process. And I'm going to sue you for the $150. And then you're going to bring this check in. And there's the prima facie evidence that you attempted to pay me and I refused payment. And then you're going to raise the Uniform Commercial Code. And then I'm going to come back with a First Amendment defense. And you and I are going to argue this case up the line until we get to the United States Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. under the First Amendment's provision. And you have a religious test here, and you're telling me that I can't practice my religious beliefs and that you're going to compel me against my will and over my objection to violate my religious conscience. And that's going to be the question for the U.S. Supreme Court to answer. And they're going to give us an answer at some point along the way. But between here and Washington, you're going to spend about $250,000, and I'm going to spend about $2,000. And you and I are going to be fighting, spending $252,000 to find out whether or not you can compel me to take this $9 from you. And it's my position you can't. Now, if you want to come back and prove to me that you can, and if you're willing to spend that kind of money, let's get after it. And he said to me, let me have a few days, and let me see if we can work this out. And then he explained to me his dilemma, his problem, that the law required him to do this. I said, that's your problem with the Public Utility Commission and the Idaho Legislature, and I don't have any problems with the PUC or the Idaho Legislature. And so a few days went by, and I got a check from Idaho Power Company. No, first of all, I got an inquiry from Idaho Power Company. Well, would you sign a stipulated agreement to waive the $9 based upon your religious beliefs? To which I returned a letter and said, yes, I would. And so they drew up a stipulated agreement that I was waiving that $9 based upon my religious beliefs. Now, they can't take that $9. They can't profit from it. And so they put a clause in there that said that they were going to donate that $9 to the state of Idaho. Now, I don't know if you knew this or not, but you can donate money to the state. And people do that. If you want to name as a beneficiary the state of New York, you just make out your will to the benefit of the treasury of the state of New York, and they'll take your charity. Every state in the union will do that. And so they sent that $9 off to the state of Idaho, and I got my check for $150. So if the question is, can they do that, the answer is, no, they cannot. But the bottom line to that is you're going to have to make those guys obey the law because they won't do it voluntarily. And it also tells us another part of the story. You have to know what the law is, don't you? All right, we're at the halfway point here, and there's your first story for the day. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law, all from the scriptural perspective, and that's 8 schools in all. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Now, again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Can they do that? That's a question that gets asked here, I think, almost every day when somebody calls. They'll ask, can they do that? They'll tell their story. And let me emphasize again, you bet, they can do that. There's evidence by the fact that that's what they done did. Now, is there some legal requirement that you comply with their requests or demands? In some cases, the answer is yes. Now, oftentimes I get accused of being a tax protester or an anarchist or a terrorist or some communist or some guy that's anti-government or unlawful. I'm a criminal. I dissent. I dissent from that opinion. It is true that I am a peculiar person. And if you look up that word peculiar in the Bible, it's mentioned above probably 10, 12 times. Peculiar. God himself identifies the people that follow the Ten Commandment model as being peculiar people, commonly known as weirdos and oddballs. Hell, I don't deny that. I wouldn't argue with that for a minute. People who practice the Ten Commandment model as opposed to the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto model are out of touch, out of step with the rest of the people. A Protestant in Italy is a peculiar person. That's because most Italians are Catholic. But, you know, on the other hand, if you take a look in North Dakota, I think you'll find that a Catholic in North Dakota is peculiar. You know, most of those people are European Protestants, and they're Germans, and so they'll follow the German Lutheran Church, more likely. So there are people out here who are iconoclasts. They're out of step with everybody else. Now, I'm not sitting here telling you to break the law. We have to practice all the laws of the United States and all the laws of the state that you live in and your community and your city ordinances. I'm not disputing that. But there's a higher law here in the United States, and I suspect that there's a higher law in Canada, Australia, and New Zealand also. And it's in Acts 5, verse 29. It tells us that we ought to obey God rather than men. So when men come up to us and say, by God, this is the law of Idaho, and you have to comply with it. And if that law violates the law of God, well, then we have a choice to make, don't we? You know, everybody's got a choice. Now, this is a very pleasant choice. Can you be compelled to take this $9? The answer is no, you can't. And the Idaho Power Company, they don't want to spend $250,000 to find out if you can refuse their $9. Now, Abraham had a story along that line. You read it in Genesis. And he'd gone out and fought a little battle with the king of Sodom. They went out and together, partners. They had some war going on there, and they fought a battle, and they won it. And the king of Sodom said to Abraham, let me share the spoil with you. And Abraham said, no. No. I won't even take so much as a thread or a shoe latchet from you, sucker. And he's talking to a king now. And this king, I'm sure, was pretty surprised. And he said, I get all of my benefits from the God of creation. And I don't take things from people like you. I don't take gifts. Now, there's a statute in the Bible that tells us not to take gifts. They're bribes. You know, they're just don't do that. And so if you follow that, now you're going to be looked upon as being kind of an oddball. And furthermore, you'd kind of like to take those gifts because, you know, everybody likes to have a present, don't they? And so this thing of gift giving, I'm not talking about, you know, a gift that you're giving to your daughter or your son or something like that. I'm talking about bribery here. And so when you're taking Social Security benefits, that's a bribe. I know somebody's going to write me a letter now and say, oh, gasp like Judy Hartson, you know, oh, I'm going to tell Mr. Witt on you. And I'm an old man, I'm 70, and I don't draw Social Security. And I don't take unemployment insurance and workman's compensation benefits from the government. And I don't use bank accounts, and I don't take largesse from government. Why is that? I'm told not to. I'm not telling you that because I want you to give up your Social Security or I want you to give up your driver's license. I don't care what you do. The question is, can they do that? And oftentimes government can make these demands upon you because you've agreed. You've signed a contract somewhere along the line. And just give you an illustration. A policeman walks up to your window and says, give me your driver's license, registration, and proof of insurance. Can they do that? You bet they can. And that's because you agreed to. You don't have any Fourth Amendment or Fifth Amendment rights involved here. You have a contract with the state, and they gave you certain benefits, privileges, and franchises there. And in the pursuit of those franchises, can they do that? Yes, they can do that. And should you comply? Well, if you got a driver's license, you should. If you don't have a driver's license, you couldn't anyway, could you? I mean, how the hell can you give the policeman your driver's license when you don't have one? So let's be intelligent, and let's smell some coffee here. What can and what can't be done, or what can they do that or can they not do that, depends on the circumstances, depends upon your status, depends upon the state of the law. I had a judge tell me one time, he said, well, that's not the state of the law in Idaho. I like that. I always remember it. Judge Schmidt told me that. And he said, that is not the state of the law in Idaho. Well, sometimes that's not the state of the law in the United States of America, or that's not the state of the law under the scripture. You know, there's different laws out here. Now, the Congress of the United States, in case you're wondering about the pecking order here, let me tell you what the pecking order is in this country. The Congress of the United States, back in 1982, they enacted a law, it's called Public Law 97-280. It was later codified into a statute. And last time I heard, it hadn't been repealed, and so if that's the case, if that's the state of the law, then here's what it is. Congress said we ought to study and apply the teachings of the scripture in the lives of families, societies, and individuals. The Supreme Court weighed in on that concept in a case called Seeger versus United States, and they said there's a higher loyalty than loyalty to the United States. Now, you tell the average police officer or the average Army sergeant that there's a higher loyalty than loyalty to the United States Army, and the guy will go berserk on you. Hell, he might go postal. You tell a cop that, and he just freaks out on you. You can't handle that. You know, he's a law enforcement officer, and he's here to enforce the law of New York. He's here to enforce the law of California. And you tell him there's a higher law out there, and the guy can't handle it. I don't deny that. I'm just, you know, I'm a reporter, so I'm just here to report that. But the state of the law is that the First Amendment supersedes the law of California. Not in every single case, but oftentimes. And so I tell my students, you know, the biggest club that you have as an individual is religious free exercise under the First Amendment. It's true that you ladies out there, you do have some clout. You have some political clout. There's other portions to the Constitution and the laws of your state and so on that give you some benefits and give you some clout. But I can't think of anything that'll give you bigger, better clout than the First Amendment free exercise club. So that's kind of like kind of what I want to put out here to you is that there's a pecking order. And the pecking order starts with God Almighty and the law of God and the law of the Scripture and the Ten Commandments is paramount. And the laws of the United States bend to that. And the laws of New Jersey bend to that. Now, if there's a conflict between the laws of New Jersey and the United States, the laws of New Jersey bend to the laws of the United States. Not in every single case, but most often. It's called occupying the field. And then if the city of Hoboken has a bitch about the law of the state of New Jersey, in most cases the law of New Jersey prevails over the law of Hoboken. See? And on down the line there's this pecking order. God comes at the top, the United States comes second, New Jersey comes third, Hoboken comes fourth. And then Joe Sixpack comes in here, you know. And you've got some rights and duties, and the law of Joe Sixpack comes in here. These are called rights. But Joe, I want to point out that you and I are down here at the bottom of the pond. We are bottom feeders. I don't make these laws, and neither do you. I don't make these rules and regulations. I don't make the customs, the usages, and the practices, and neither do you. But you and I are subject to them. Now, down here at the bottom of the pond, though, there's some trickle-down, you know, as they used to say in economics. It's the trickle-down theory. So there's some trickle-down. Let me tell you another story here. One of my students walks into the Holiday Inn in Boise, Idaho, some years back, and he wants to rent a room. Now, he's there with his wife, two sons, and a daughter. He walks in, and he put $50 on the counter. He says, I want to rent a room. And the clerk said to him, I want to see your driver's license. So this guy's name is Irwin. And Irwin said to this guy, he said, who told you that I have a driver's license? And the clerk said, well, sir, if you don't have a driver's license, I cannot rent you a room. Have you ever had that happen to you? You walk in, you want to rent a room, and the clerk says, give me your driver's license. I don't know if you understand this or not, but there's laws in this country that prevent discrimination. I mean, if you're black and you walk into a hotel, let's try this one on for size here. Let's suppose this guy's black, and he walks in and says, I want to rent a room. And the clerk says, sir, give me your driver's license. And the black guy says, who in the hell told you I had a driver's license? And the clerk says, if you don't have a driver's license, I'm not going to rent you a room. Would that be a discriminatory policy? Let's mull that one over a minute. What if this black guy was blind and he didn't drive? He wouldn't have a driver's license. Could you refuse to rent a room to a black guy because he doesn't have a driver's license because he's blind, like the governor of New York? Surely you jest. Surely that cannot be the law, can it? And so here's this guy, Irwin. Now, Irwin's white and his wife is white and the children are all white and they're all standing there. And the guy says, if you don't have a driver's license. And so Irwin said, excuse me, sir, do you see that $50 bill there? That $50 bill says on its face, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. And he said, now I'm tendering this $50 bill to you, and I want to rent a room. The guy says, well, if you don't have a driver's license, it's against company policy. And Irwin said to him, well, I don't deny it. It probably is your company policy. But he said, your company policy is discriminatory against me and my family. And the guy says, well, everybody has a driver's license. And so Irwin asked him this question. He says, well, let me ask you this. Let's suppose that a guy came in here and he was blind. Would you expect him to have a driver's license? And the guy said, well, no. But he went on to say, but you're not blind. And he said, well, then you have some exceptions to this driver's license requirement then, don't you? And the clerk said, well, yeah, if you were blind, we wouldn't require a driver's license. And they said, now let's try this story over again. There's my money, and I want to rent a room, and I don't have a driver's license. And he said, well, then you've got to have some other form of state-issued identification. And he said, what state? And he said, well, okay, any state. So he said, well, what if a guy came in here and he wasn't a citizen of the United States? He's just a Japanese tourist passing through, and he wants to rent a room here. And then he said, but you're not a Japanese tourist. And he said, well, do you have a discriminatory policy against Japanese tourists then? What kind of an exception do you make when you can't prove that you're a United States citizen or you don't have any state-issued identification? And the guy said, well, but it's our policy. Again, I don't deny that it's your policy, but is your policy, does it comport with the Bill of Rights? Does it comport with the laws of the United States that prohibit you from discriminating against people? You know, there's a lot of people that don't have state-issued identification. I'm one of them. Did you know there's 14 million Americans that don't have Social Security numbers? It's not very many, I'll concede that. But, you know, America has 300 million people, and 14 million of them don't have Social Security numbers. And I'm one of those. And I live my life here without a Social Security number. Unfortunately, I don't have any problems. I haven't had any problems because I don't have a Social Security number. Somebody else is going to write me a letter now. They're going to say, well, you can't open a bank account. Who in the hell would want to open a bank account? I mean, if I went down to Flo's Whorehouse and I wanted to knock off a little on Friday night, do you think they're going to ask me for a Social Security number? And if they did, and I said, well, I'm going to give you a Social Security number for a trick tonight, do you think they'd turn my money down? You know, the state may come along with some new licensing scheme here for whorehouses that you have to have a Social Security number, but no, sir, I don't have to have a Social Security number to go to a whorehouse, and I don't need a Social Security number or state ID to rent a room at the Holiday Inn either. Now, maybe you do. I don't know. Now, they do kind of have it over you, because if you're out here, you know, I'm from Isabella, Missouri. Now, I go out to California, let's say, and I want to rent a room out there, and the guy says, well, if you don't have identification, well, I'm not going to rent you a room. It poses a problem. And do I want to sue this guy out here in Sacramento, California? Because I had a problem like that come up one time. And the answer is no, 1,000 times no. I do not want to manage a case from Isabella, Missouri in Sacramento, California. It just, economically, that doesn't make any sense. So I don't want to do that. So the way you get a room is you reserve the room in advance, put up a deposit. And then you tell them, I don't have any identification, and when I get there, the code number is 13. And so you get there and you walk up to the clerk and you say, I want to rent a room here, and I'm code number 13. I'm George Gordon. Oh, yes, sir, Mr. Gordon, and you're code number 13. That's all he needs. He doesn't need your driver's license or anything else. Okay? And you pay the man and you rent your room. Now, that's the practical way to do that. However, you know, if I walk into a Holiday Inn like Irwin did here in Boise, he says, well, I don't have any identification. Did it ever occur to you that there are people out there that don't have any state-issued identification? I'm referring to these same 14 million people again. There's a bunch of us. We don't sign contracts with Missouri or with the United States or anybody else. And as a result of that, you know, we're kind of looked upon as being peculiar people, probably traitors or something else, communists, or by people that can't read and write and don't have a brain to think with. But then, you know, unless they're right. I'm not taking that away from you or anybody else. So the guy, he couldn't handle this. He went back and he got the manager. The manager comes out, and they went through the same drill again. And the guy says, we're not going to rent you a room. And Irwin said to the man, this is the manager. Now, he said, sir, you're going to rent me a room. That's the bottom line. What we don't know is, when are you going to rent me the room? Are you going to rent me the room today before we have a judicial determination? Or are you going to rent me the room after I get a court order? That's the real issue. Now think about that. You're going to rent me the room. You know, you could be a black guy walking in, and the guy says, we ain't renting you because you're black. Okay. The real bottom line is, sir, you're going to rent me the room. What we don't know is, when are you going to rent me the room? That's what we're going to determine at some future date, with or without the court order. Because we all know the Holiday Inn's going to rent, don't we? Now, looking at it from the Holiday Inn's perspective, and I don't deny that the Holiday Inn has a problem, they want to be able to identify you so that in case you steal their TV, they know who to go back to. But I don't have to identify myself to the Holiday Inn. See, that's their dilemma. I don't have to identify myself, and they can't find me if I steal their TV. Their problem is with the legislature. See, the legislature needs to come up with a rule, a regulation, some kind of a format for them, so that they can protect their interests. And I'm not here arguing with the Holiday Inn's policy. I can understand their. I'm an old timey landlord. You know, I understand. But we also have the Fourth and Fifth Amendments here in the United States, and the Holiday Inn needs to understand that, you know, just because you need this policy doesn't mean that I have to comply with it. Now, I don't deny the Holiday Inn has a policy, but I deny that they have a capacity to enforce it upon me. Now, that's the bottom line to that. So the question, when it's asked, can they do that, the answer is yes, and they will. And listen, it works, because 999 times out of 1,000 people will just whip out their driver's license, or they will come up with some kind of state ID, or in the worst case scenario, they'll just walk out and go to some other hotel or motel that doesn't require the identification. They can be bamboozled, they can be intimidated, but you know, that's them. I'm not here to tell you that you shouldn't be intimidated or bamboozled by anybody. If you want to be intimidated, go to it. But you don't have to. That's my point. And so the question that arises, can they do that? The answer is, yeah, they can, but there's a cost. Now, the manager in this case said, you know, you don't look like the kind of guy that's going to steal our TV, and I'm going to go ahead and rent to you. He said, but we need identification. So Irwin turned to his wife, and he said, identify me. And she pointed right at him. She says, that is Irwin Hill. Got that? That is Irwin Hill. And that's all the state's going to do, is identify it and put their seal of approval on. You want to know who the guy is? Ask the guy's wife. She can identify him. And she did, and they rented the room, and that was the end of that, and he didn't steal their TV, and it was another successful business transaction, and it was a business transaction that was accomplished without identification. Isn't that just special? So it can be done. Sometimes it takes a little doing, it takes a little perseverance, but you know, when you get right down to where the rubber meets the road, you can probably prevail. All right, I'm out of time here, boys and girls. Story time is over for the day. Let me give you a reminder here that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.